8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Knotfest.com presents Talk to Me. With over 300 interviews under his belt and 6 years running, your host Joshua Toomey interviews metal and rock's heaviest hitters. Follow the show at Talk to Me Talk. Here's your host, Joshua Toomey.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into another episode of Talk to Me here on Knotfest.com. The guest this week is Jason Wisdom of Becoming the Archetype. They've got a brand new album coming out August 26th, Children of the Great Extinction. The Lost Colony is out now, and man, it is a jam. As always, I am Joshua Toomey, joined by the one and only Chris Aiken. Chris, how are we doing?
I am awesome, man. How's it going over there?
It is going well. Man, your Philadelphia Stars, after all this talk about the USFL all season long, my team has the number one overall pick next year in the draft. Your team going to the USFL Super Bowl. So
that is right.
And you're going to the game.
I am. I'm going to the Super Bowl, baby. And I didn't even have to mortgage my house to get a ticket.
I think they gave you, like, you buy one ticket, get 10 free.
Yeah, it really is. It's pretty sad. I'm thinking it's going to be like attendance, like 1500 people, maybe. It doesn't sound like it's going to do well. And it's funny, I was listening to the local sports talk here today, and they were supposed to have the coach of the Stars on today. So, you know, I was like, yeah, I'm going to listen to this. My team, my coach didn't show. And they made a point to say he was a no-show. And I was just like, oh boy, I hope they show up for the game on Sunday.
So the game, they're playing it at the Hall of Fame field, right?
They are, Benson Stadium. Yep.
So that's where they do the Hall of Fame game. Every
year. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. It's right down the road for me, about an hour down the road for me in Canton. So yeah, I'm pretty pumped. General admission seating for the Super Bowl. So if I get there early enough, I might be sitting on the 50. Who knows? I'll have to make myself a couple of signs so I can make it. I'll make a Talk to Me sign and I'll hold it up. If I draw a Philadelphia Stars logo next to it, or Talk to Me supports the Philadelphia Stars or something like that, and I'll hold it up, I'll bet you we get on TV.
There we go, man. Well, it has been warm here, man, and I almost did the show today from an air-conditioned bathroom, but I figured I would tough it out and be on the show, you know, in front of the camera, not just behind the scenes.
You thought that it would be better to do that than to broadcast it on Instagram, but not on Knotfest.com?
We don't need to dive too much into that. You dove into a lot of that on the CMS, but man, yeah. Tracy Guns is just, he's another tool bag.
He's a tool bag. Just admit it. I know we're not supposed to be that mean, but he's a fucking tool. That simple.
And I stand with, if I go to a show and the guitar player is in the bathroom playing along to everybody else, I'm going to be pissed.
Not acceptable. It's not acceptable. You know, and again, we're not going to get all into it, but the conversation that we had on Saturday about this and Neely going on and on about the whole, well, if it was, at least he tried, and you know, how could that be acceptable if he didn't play? Yeah, it would be acceptable if they replaced him right. Or played as a four piece or anything else. It's not acceptable to be in another room. That's just dumb. Yeah, the whole thing is dumb. It's almost like a microcosm of the LA Guns career. If you're willing to play a show from the shitter, that kind of says something about your career, doesn't it?
Right. Yeah. There's that stigma about the band anyway, and that this just adds to it. Like, this isn't like when it popped up that it was LA Guns, it's just like, yeah, that sounds like something LA Guns would do.
The common joke is, and speaking of shitters,
you know? Well, speaking of live shows, I meant to bring this up last week, but the live Talk to Me here in Louisville, Kentucky. At a place called Losers A12, technically on the sunny side of Louisville, over in Jeffersonville, Indiana. Okay. Losers A12, the live show is July 15th. Three of the guys from Flaw will be out there with me, kind of breaking down their debut record. The bar just opened. Like they had a soft opening on the 23rd of June, fully opened up on the 24th. So the wife and I went out to dinner, and then I was like, well, let's run by Losers, check it out, kind of give me the lay of the land to see where we're going to set this podcast up. And I think it's going to be awesome. Like they're just the,
very cool.
The stage area into like a seating area with some like, you know, bar top type tables, things like that. You know, the Facebook, event page has got, you know, nice handful of people coming out. I think it'll be a lot of fun to have the local folks. And a couple of people said they're interested in coming. A couple of people said they are coming, that are coming from a distance. And I'm like, all right. I mean, if you're coming from a distance, I'll buy you a drink. You know,
there you go. Nice. Well, that might be incentive for me to show up then.
Right.
Buying drinks.
Well, but, hey man, you hit up Canton and then come on down.
Yeah, there we go. On the way. But so is it, what kind of seating is it? Is it just going to be like seats, or is it going to be almost like a comedy club style thing where everybody has like a little table and you can have a couple of drinks and watch and participate, or what?
From what I can tell, if we set it up the way I'm thinking we're going to set it up, it's going to be like, you know, the bar section at like Buffalo Wild Wings, all the high top tables. There's like a long section or whatever of the building. Okay. So like basically the stage area, and then it kind of goes deep. It's like long and deep, you know.
Okay.
And a lot of tabletops, bar tops. So I think it'll be pretty fun. I don't think it's going to be like, you know, what do you call it? Like folding chairs, anything like that. Right. So, but right. it should be nice.
Are you going to do like Q&A, like with fans, like have your girl walking around with a portable saying, hey, hey, Dan from wherever,
right?
What's your question for Flaw?
I'm trying to figure out how much of the interaction, like, you know, how much we'll do of just me asking questions, maybe do a, you know, does anyone have a cue, you know, have a question for Flaw type thing, or, you know, do the whole, if you have a question for him, write it down on this piece of paper, I'll read them off towards the end kind of thing like that.
Why don't you do that? And I'm going to tell you why, as somebody that has done this the failed other way.
Right.
There's nothing worse. And I've done this when you say, okay, who's got a question for whoever? And everybody's a shy douche and nobody will actually pump in. And you're like, anybody? Anybody? You know, you know, it just really looks bad. It's a bad optic where, at least if you have the questions, and then that way you could kind of cheat too. If nobody has questions, you can say, well, Dan says.
Just Chris A from Twinsburg asks,
<That's> right.
Which is better, you guys or Flybanger?
Well, Flybanger. I mean Flaw.
But no, it's gonna be fun. You know, get those guys up. Jay Daunt, Ryan, the bass player, and Chris Ballinger, the drummer.
Very good.
Get those three out there. And, you know, I've got some history with Jay. I played in a band with him for a little bit post Primer 55, post Flaw for both of us. Technically, I played a little bit with Ryan when he was playing in a band called Black Market Hero. But this will be the first time I've met Chris, the drummer. So it'll be cool to kind of sit down with those guys and just kind of reminisce about the good old days, about the late 90s, early 2000s.
Hell yeah. Dude, this thing's going to end up being like 3.5 hours. You watch. You're going into it hoping you can get 45 minutes and then you'll just be like, start shooting the shit and the stories will start going. You know, that's how these things always work.
Well, in theory, you know, the club turns into New Metal Night at 8. Okay. So my show starts at 7, do a good hour right into 8 o'clock, and then, you know, then it turns into New Metal Night, which is, you know, they're gonna be playing Limp Bizkit and Slipknot and Deftones and Korn and all that stuff. So it's gonna be a lot of fun. Speaking of New Metal, also, he's about 99% sure, but I think Lauren from Roach Coach is also gonna join me for a quick segment. He's gonna come down to the show and do it. So if you want to meet Lauren from Roach Coach, Lauren Kozlowski, he'll be there also.
Wow, this thing is celebrity packed.
Podcast, New Metal. I mean, you know, if we're going to do a New Metal Night, we need a guy that does a New Metal centric podcast, not just random New Metal dudes here and there.
That's right. And there you go. You're putting it together. Dude, this thing's going to be fun.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I feel like I could do an hour pretty easy. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, shit, we do an hour doing this and we're just fucking around. So.
You know, it's funny, talking about Fred Corey last week on the show.
Yeah.
Obviously, great response from it. You know, we had so many people reaching out through text message and Instagram and Facebook messaging and just, you know, commenting, things like that. It was crazy how, you know, that kind of came together pretty quick between Fred and I to do an interview with him again. And then just the outpouring of everybody, you know, positive comments here and there for Fred to come back on. But the one thing that really hit me was how far I've come in this thing, because, you know, Fred was episode 4. Like, right. He was one of my first ever guests, and thinking back to interviewing him back then to kind of the interview we had the other day, it's like night and day, man. Just carrying a conversation, talking about some stuff, you know, not necessarily like having questions written down, just being comfortable with everything. It's crazy how, you know, I mean, the show will be 7 years in September. So, I mean, it's obviously going to be a little bit easier, I guess, 7 years in rather than 4 weeks in, but,
right.
Sure. But yeah, it just after I listened to it and kind of thought about it for a few days, I was like, you know, it just felt different, I guess.
Sure. Well, I think the show graduated probably when you changed the name from Talk to Me to Speak to Me.
Right.
Yeah, that was funny. I don't know how they came up with that. Did you see that?
Whatever website that was. Yeah, it was some random website that just said that Fred Corey was recently on the Speak to Me podcast, which is funny because that was honestly the other name for the show.
Okay.
It was either going to be Talk to Me or Speak to Me.
Right.
Obviously when we talk, but it's just funny to see it kind of written out like that.
Yeah, I saw that and I was like, man, is not the name on the video?
Well, it's on the video. It's on everything. But I don't know. It's almost like it like got translated and then translated back. Like,
right.
You know, so, but yeah, I saw that. But that was pretty funny.
It's like, hey, web guys, right there, right there.
Yeah. So talk
to me.
Yeah. And then I'm on notfest.com.
Yeah, there it is. Hey, whatever. You know what? In the end, I don't think either one of us gives a shit. As long as they play the clip, you can call it whatever. As long as they don't call it Talk Aiken, right?
And I will say, I sent you a clip of I forget what it was, but a website actually reached out and asked for permission to use some of the audio from. Normally, they just throw that crap up, don't give you any credit or anything. But the website nicely reached out and asked for the audio.
I think we're stars, man.
We might
be. People are fearing to being sued by the big powerhouse Talk to Me podcast.
Yeah, they got the they asked permission for the audio of you and I both going right, right,
yeah,
right, right.
Too good.
Too good. Well, let's dive into a story before we get into my interview with Jason Wisdom of Becoming the Archetype. But a guy that you and I recently interviewed together was Igor Cavalera.
That's right.
And he says that a reunion of the classic Sepultura lineup would, quote, be amazing, but claims he is happy playing with just Max. So,
do you think it would be amazing?
Yeah.
Like, do you really?
Oh, yeah. Like, if you gave me Igor, Max, Paulo, Andreas, all day long.
I'm not saying that you wouldn't want to see it. What I'm saying is, do you think the performance would be amazing?
Yeah.
Knowing that they don't like each other.
I think that that might even help it. You know, the anger of the music or whatnot, making it all come through. So yeah, kind of his saying that there was the, you know, that he's happy just playing with Max. And I remember even like Max a long time ago came on the show talking about the Return to Roots tour, saying that that's like the closest you'll ever get to any kind of Sepultura reunion. I mean, I had a friend of mine actually messaged me the day after seeing this in Salt Lake City.
Okay.
He went to the Cavalera show, you know, where the Beneath the Remains Arise tour, and he goes it was magical. It was like going to church. It was the closest we're ever going to get to watching those old that old Arise video from 92 or whatever,
right,
from Brazil. Like he said it was just, he was absolutely amazing, man.
Sure, dude. And by contrast, Did I not read that Sepultura this week played shows without Max, Igor, or Andreas?
Yeah, it's down to Paolo. Down is to just Paolo. Like, and from everything I've gathered with Paolo, I don't think he plays on the albums. Like, so, no. I mean, you know, they've always kind of talked about how terrible of a bass player he is. He's just kind of in the band because he's, you know, because he's always been around.
Right. But, wow. Can you, how disappointing would that be if you went to a Sepultura show and you know, I am all about the Derek Green era. I love the Derek Green era, but even with that said, I would be very disappointed if Andreas was not on the stage.
What that if he was in the bathroom?
Yeah. Well, that might be acceptable. I don't know. Would I be able to look on Instagram and watch him play?
You will be able to. Not to get back on that, but when I go to a show, like, the music is like half of what I'm going for.
Yeah.
Like if I'm going to see the band play live, I want to see the band play live. Exactly. I don't want to go and just hear the tracks. If I wanted to hear the album, I could just go listen to it in the car.
Yeah, I mean, if I wanted to hear a Sepultura album, I'll pull up Under a Gray Sky or whatever that thing's called, and I'll listen to that. I don't want to hear three guys playing and one guy, you know, miming it in the bathroom. No. No.
But yeah, I would absolutely love to see a Max, Igor, Andreas, Paolo Sepultura out there. You know, will it ever happen? No. Like I remember even like I feel like in the late 90s, even a couple of years after the quote unquote breakup, I mean, they were already getting offers from like Ozfest to do a reunion. And if I'm not mistaken, they were getting like seven figure offer to reunite for Ozfest back in, you know, only just a few years after the breakup.
Yeah.
So
I think it would be a big money deal, but I think Max has dug it in and convinced himself. And I think Andreas has dug in and convinced himself he's never going to do anything with Gloria again. True. And Max is never going to do anything without Gloria again. And it's just the way it is. And you really can't fault Max because look, he left a huge band, but unlike most that they do and then they don't find success, he's found tons of success after Sepultura with Soulfly and Cav Conspiracy and Killer Be Killed and Nail Bomb, and you know, he's had so many other great bands.
Yeah,
you know, he doesn't need it. I wonder if the other guys need it as much as I don't think Max needs it. I think they may need it more.
I think I've interviewed Igor, I've interviewed Max, I've interviewed Andreas, never interviewed Paolo. Judging from just interviewing them, they seem like nice enough guys to where I think that the four of them, they probably don't have too much animosity towards one another. I think it is Gloria and management and different managers and business. And I think if you got down to it, those guys probably, if they got in a room together, would probably be pretty ecstatic to be in a room together because of what they built. You know, they would think back to Chaos AD and Roots and Arise and just be pumped me. You know, I wish they could, you know, just sit down and like bygones be bygones. I mean, Igor didn't talk to Max for 10 years before he got back, you know, back, and that was his brother.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
I think the only way this is gonna ever happen, and I'm with you, I don't think it's ever gonna happen, but I think the only way it would possibly happen is if some family friend or some Sepultura family friend like passed away or something bad happened to him or something back in Brazil and they needed to raise money. And they just decided like they were going to do a one night only thing to raise money for so-and-so, you know, whoever that would be. And they might get together and then have some conversation and be like, hey, why aren't we making all the money we can right now? We're all in our late 50s. Let's cash in, you know.
How big would a full-on Sepultura reunion be? Like
where? I guess that's the question.
We'll start with the States.
See, I don't think it, and see, this is one of those questions that I think when you talk about this kind of stuff, there's other bands that are kind of in the same boat. Different style of band, but Skid Row is in the same boat.
Yeah.
You know, people want it. People say they would like to hear it. But then when you kind of remember what they were doing the last time,
what were they really doing?
Right.
Sepultura was playing, 1,500 seat clubs on Blood Rooted.
So yeah, Skid Row getting back together with the classic lineup. I mean, we're not talking arenas here. So right. I mean, at what point do you really need to do it? I mean, you're going to get either a really good support slot for a big band, you know, like a band that's doing arenas, and we've talked about all the time, like a Five Finger Death Punch with a reunited Sepultura or something like that. You would get something like that. Yeah. Obviously Sepultura is not going to be doing arenas. I mean, they might be doing big theaters or something, maybe a little bit more than what they're doing now. But I mean, really, they're probably just going to be back on that same club tour that Soulfly and Sepultura are currently on anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think outside of the U.S. they would do better. But here in the U.S., I don't see more than 2,000. The music's too heavy, first of all.
Yeah.
So, you know, the music's too heavy to where they're not going to do 10,000 people. They're never going to do 10,000 people. It's just not happening anymore.
Well, if you go to like one night only Rock and Rio headlining thing, like they could headline Rock and Rio or whatever the equivalent is that now, you know, they could, you know, one night only the four of them back together, blah, blah, blah. I mean, that would be one thing, but yeah, sure. In the States, I don't think that they would do much.
Yeah. And they might be, but, and even on like the European festivals, they'd probably be high up.
Yeah.
A reunited Sepultura would probably be high up on that list. But they're not headlining.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, some of those European fests, I mean, if you look at them, I mean, you've got like Korn and Deftones and stuff headlining nights. So I think that Sepultura could slip into one of those slots.
No way. They're not big enough for that. Right. Korn and Limp Bizkit still have like 15 radio hits.
True.
You know, Sepultura doesn't have, do they have any territory?
Right. You know, my jam Slave New World or something like that. But I mean, so some of the, maybe the more, maybe not like a download, but maybe more of like a Hellfest or, you know, something a little bit more metal centric. You could get them headlining those things.
Yeah, I think so. But not Vakken or whatever. Vakken, they're 7 o'clock band.
You know. I'm there. Put me on for a Sepultura reunion.
I'd like to see it. Definitely. If it was Vakken where they broadcast it anyway, I'd watch it. I would definitely watch it. I would find a way to stream rip it and keep it forever. But you know, I just don't see it happening. There's no need. Especially Max really doesn't need it because he could just now tour with Igor.
Right.
He can tour with Igor, and like you said, people that are going to see these shows think that it's as good as anything that they would have with Andreas and Paolo. Maybe better.
Right.
Honestly, I mean, I don't know who the guitar player is. It's who? Somebody from Possessed?
Yeah, I believe that's the guy from Possessed. So then it's the bass player from Soulfly. So
it's an upgrade in bass, and it's probably lateral at worst for guitar player.
Right.
So yeah, why would Max do that?
Well, let's dive into my interview with Jason Wisdom. Let's check out a little bit of the Lost Colony off of Children of the Great Extinction. Cool. And then Chris and I will be back with you momentarily. All right, guys, let's welcome Jason Wisdom back to the Talk To Me podcast here at notfest.com. Becoming the Archetyped, Children of the Great Extinction, out August 26th And Jesus Christ, man, this album is awesome.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much. I'm glad you took time to listen to it and you think so highly of it, because I know your opinion, you get a lot of metal to listen to.
Yeah, and some of it slips through the crack, like I told you a minute ago, man. But but like when the Lost Colony popped up on Spotify a couple of days ago,
yeah,
I was like, I gotta check out what my boy Jason's doing. And Jesus, man, like it's funny, I've used the word Jesus twice now for a archetype track, but man, the song is just a journey. Like, well, I mean, that's the only song out when this interview's out. That's the only main song out. So we'll kind of jump on that song. The Lost Colony, and it from start to finish, man, it's a journey. You know, just kind of takes you through so many different places. Before we started recording, you know, you brought up a little bit of Mastodon, a little bit of Gojira,
yeah,
you know, some of the influences out there, man. So just kind of talk about The Lost Colony as a track itself.
Yeah. So, I mean, those are bands that, you know, were influenced by, you know, bands that actually in some ways are peers of ours, you know, contemporaries of when we came around in the late 90s, early 2000s. And we've kind of held on to all those influences. So, you know, writing a song like this, you said it's a journey. And I think that's how Becoming the Archetype writes music. Maybe that's an old school way of writing metal, but like, you know, some people I've been seeing some comments, you know, like breaking the rule, you're not supposed to read the comments online. And some people are like, man, it started out one way and then it took me like totally turned me for a loop and went another direction at the end. And that's the kind of music I love to listen to. Yeah. If it's just one thing, you know, one dynamic the whole way through, I lose interest real quick. So the record is like that too. Like the record kind of goes up and down. It's the first full concept album I've ever written lyrically. So it's a whole story from the first track to the 10th track all the way through. So.
Yeah. And listening to the album, I mean, track one, you kind of start with talking about the earth and the world or whatever. And then at the end of the album, I mean, you kind of come back around to it. So yes, I mean, I did catch that, you know, that there's a running theme throughout the album. Totally. Just the Lost Colony as a track itself, though, I mean,
yeah,
it takes you on that journey, but then that guitar solo comes in and I'm like, you know, like holy dragon force, man.
So that's Daniel Gailey, who was in Becoming the Archetype.
Nice.
For two albums and did a bunch of tours with him. When he was just a kid, he came on board with us and toured all over the world. He used to jokingly call me his tour dad when we were out there on the road. And now he's doing really well for himself in a band called Fit for a King.
Oh, nice.
Who's killing it right now. He plays in a band called Phineas. So, you know, since he was the dude who used to shred on some of our old records, I was like, man, you got to get at least one shred on here. So he's not free to do the whole record, but, yeah, man, that's Dragon Force is a funny, comparison. Cause I tell everybody it's the video game solo.
Yeah.
To me, it sounds like Guitar Hero kind of solo. So,
well, I mean, it definitely hits it, man. And then there's a few breakdowns on this album too, that, you know, when I've talked lately, there's so many different, like, I feel like metal is just, we've gotten to a point where everything's done. But then,
right, totally,
you know, I'll get a Bloodywood album, you know, that's got some Indian influences, and they take metal one way. You know what I'm saying? And then, you know, I get this album and there's some breakdowns that come up that I'm like, oh, that's a totally new take on the breakdown. So I'm just like, I keep getting, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, just surprised with what everybody's doing. And even in this track, man, the breakdown comes in very reminiscent to maybe like Walk by Pantera, but it's its own thing itself.
Yeah. We actually called it the Pantera breakdown when we were writing it. And the idea was that it sort of introduces itself in a really simple form, and it makes you think, okay, I'm going to get Walk by Pantera. And then when it comes in, it goes into a polyrhythm thing and kind of changes it up. And the other thing about that, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that, but like, I think we almost go through time periods of what a breakdown sounds like. Yeah. You know what I mean? I can remember in the mid 2000s, you know, all the big China cymbal breakdowns of like the, you know, crabcore days and stuff. And then I think, you know, it changed from there. Went into like djent stuff, and everybody was doing these like crazy, you know, Meshuggah-esque kind of breakdowns. And, you know, for us though, like it's just the old school, like Pantera style, like heavy. Doesn't, you know, it doesn't have to be anything other than just something you can bob your head to is a breakdown, in my opinion. So,
right.
Yeah.
So let's get into the nuts and bolts of this, man. I mean, what brought you back to becoming the archetype. Obviously, they did a few albums without you and things like that. And then, you know, what brings you back around to the band, wanting to kind of get back, you know, to your roots?
Yeah, so I left the band in 2011 after doing my last record, which was called Celestial Completion. And then they did two or three tours after that, and a record, one more record. So I thought it was a cool record. I actually wrote the lyrics and the concept for that record, even though I wasn't in the band. You know, so there was never any animosity. Just want to make that clear. Some people ask me still to this day, they're like, well, dude, why did you quit, man? I just thought maybe you don't get along with those guys. I left because we were about to have our first kid, and heavy metal is notorious for not, you know, paying like a full-time job. So, but then, you know, 2020 happened. And I think I speak for a lot of people when I say that was a time when, you know, the whole world kind of went on pause. And in a sense, this was a blessing that came out of that. I had a lot of time to sit down and be creative and sort of dig into some old ideas. I'd had some demos sitting on my computer, and Seth had some ideas. Seth's the guitar player. And Duck was just like, dude, let's play some music again, you know? So this is the first time Duck and I have been back in the band together. Duck's the drummer. Brent Duckett goes by Duck.
Great name.
But yeah, but he and I have been playing music together since 1998, 1999, for what ultimately became Becoming the Archetype. So it was awesome to be back together for this.
What are you guys all kind of in the same area, or was this total file sharing type stuff, or how did you guys go about that part of it?
So we can't do total file sharing because I'm almost 40 years old, and that just doesn't feel like, so here's the reality. We probably could do it that way, but to do a new Becoming Archetype record, I was like, this can't just be another record. Like, I have another band called Death Therapy. I've done 3 records with that, so I can write music, but writing a new Becoming the Archetype record felt like, I don't know if I can pull that off. You know, how can we recapture sort of the lightning in a bottle kind of thing? Like when we were 18 years old and we were writing music in the basement, you know, I don't want it to just come out and feel like any other record. I want it to come out and feel like, man, these guys just picked right up where they left off. So we insisted we had to get in the same room together. Right as the pandemic had started, lockdowns hadn't happened yet. We got together, started writing some riffs, started writing some ideas together. Just sort of turned the microphones on and recorded ourselves in a room. So yeah, it was done pretty organically. And then we just sort of took turns, you know, getting together with the producer, and I would kind of come in and just jam stuff, man, throw the vocals on there as we went. And it was very organic. I think that's part, hopefully people can feel that when they're listening to it. It doesn't feel like a record that was pasted together. It was just like, this is just us writing tunes that make us feel good. So
over the last 10 years, I mean, I know you've done Death Therapy and things like that. So yeah. Doing Death Therapy and getting it out there, I'm assuming every time you did an interview, it was Death Therapy this, Death Therapy that, but somewhere in the interview it was like, hey, so what, you know, anything That's ever going to happen with Becoming the Archetype? So, I mean, is it one of those deals where over the years, I mean, the kind of the legend of the band's maybe, you know, grown a little bit, and you've kind of seen that from maybe an outside perspective, you know, doing the Death Therapy stuff.
Yeah. And, you know, I even had somebody ask me, they were like, dude, there's so much hype now around this Becoming the Archetype reunion. Does it make you feel like nobody cared about Death Therapy? And I was like, man, you know, that's a whole new thing. Becoming the Archetype, we worked for, you know, nearly 20 years as a band to build a brand and to tour, you know, toured all over the world. I got to go to Africa on one of the last tours that I ever did. I mean, we worked really hard. We got to work with Devin Townsend on a record, which totally changed everything as far as I view music. So yeah, I mean, I get asked about it. I got asked about it constantly for the past 5 or 6 years, every time I do a Death Therapy interview. But it's exciting, man. You know, and actually for the last 2 years, I kind of had to keep my mouth shut because we were already working on this. I already knew it was going to happen. Right. We're kind of sitting on songs and I'm like, man, I want to tell people so bad because they're like, hey man, any chance you'll ever do anything with BTA? I'm just like having to write them back. Like, no, nah, probably won't ever happen.
Screw to keep those them, guys, you know,
like keep them guessing.
Should they've even started some stuff being like, no, I would never play with Duck ever again.
Yeah. I don't like those guys. Start a feud.
Well, the one thing, I guess, the not that any no one cared about Death Therapy because, you know, it was very good stuff. I guess the question for me would be, like, does it just show you how tough it is to start something new after something like Becoming the Archetype is, you know, kind of out there?
100% it does. But also, I mean, to start something new in, you know, 2015, in the streaming world, you know what I mean? It's, yeah, it's hard for someone to start a new podcast nowadays. It's hard for someone to start a new band. There's just so much noise out there. So Becoming the Archetype came around sort of in this like perfect little window, in the mid 2000s, where there was just an explosion of metalcore, I think, all over the country, basements, you know, people's houses, house shows, you know, just all kinds of stuff that eventually got shut down and they don't do that stuff so much anymore. Was happening, and so many bands coming up that we got to play with that have become, you know, legendary bands. Like, we got to tour with Zao, and we've got to tour with, you know, all these, all, you know, As I Lay Dying, Under Oath, August Burns Red, all these cool bands that Norma Jean that came up at the same time as us. And so yeah, I mean, it's a different ball game to start over. And with Death Therapy, I really did start over. It's like, it doesn't sound, it's not metal. There's no guitar in the band. So it can't be, BTA is a guitar band, you know?
All right.
So
with Death Therapy, getting out there and doing this, I mean, because Death Therapy is way more electronic, kind of the Nine Inch Nails, yeah, approach to everything, where, you know, you were, it was definitely a, obviously if somebody's a big BTA fan and you hit them with Death Therapy, they're like, all right, I'll give it a chance. Cause it's Jason. But you know, obviously if you're going looking for, you know, BTA part two, you're not going to get that.
Right. And I mean, that's really humbling to me that people have kind of hung around, you know, and put up with what I've done and messed around with, because a lot of it for me was just to try to challenge myself for all these years with BTA. It was just doing one thing. I was the screaming, the guy who screamed, played the bass guitar and screamed and growled and stuff. And so then with Death Therapy, I get a little chance to experiment, get out there a little bit into the weeds, creatively. And actually, so the way I can tie that back into what is going on with BTA now is, on this record, I feel like I got to go all over the place vocally. I did all kinds of different styles of vocals, different styles of clean vocals, different styles of, you know, harsh vocals, whatever you want to call them. I hate the term clean vocals because it's like, what's the opposite of that? Dirty vocals? Like, you know what I mean? It's metal vocals, yeah, yeah. But like, so yeah, whereas in the early days of BTA, I was just, you know, it's just not something I probably even would have trusted myself to mess with, you know. Of course, I went through a phase where it was like, you know, that's only lame bands try to write music that people will like, you know? So it was like, you know, any sellout bands. Oh, yeah. It was like, no, we're not going to sing. Singing is, that's selling out. Anyway, whatever. I've grown up a little bit. Now I just want to, please, somebody please buy me out. Please. I'm selling. No one's buying. So
now you're like, please sell out. You know, like, I will do anything you guys want.
Yeah.
I will be your puppet. did you take anything from Death Therapy into this album, and kind of any kind of experimentation that you did in Death Therapy that you could kind of throw into this? You know, were there things that you learned kind of doing a different style of music that you brought into this album?
Well, I worked with the same producer as the last Death Therapy record. His name's Nate Washburn. He's here in Atlanta. Speaking of which, you asked earlier if we were all in the same area. We recorded the record in Atlanta. But Seth lives in Wisconsin now, so he had to come down for that. But yeah, I mean, working with Nate, he and I had, oddly enough, we worked on a Death Therapy record for like a year, and then we worked on this BTA record for a year. So we had a really good chemistry going in the studio, and we knew exactly what we were shooting for. So there were a lot of times where there was an idea that we would have, and I could just tell Nate, you know, he would know exactly what I was talking about, and Duck and Seth were kind of looking at me like, all right, I guess we'll trust you. I guess we'll trust you that that'll turn out cool. And then it, you know, obviously turned out cool. So
when you're writing this type of stuff, are you writing guitar wise? You're writing bass wise and giving it to the guitar player? Or are you a guitar player at heart somewhere in there?
Not so much. I've always been the awkward vocalist guy who tells the other people what to do by miming it or making the noises with my mouth. Like, okay, I need a guitar part. It goes like, you know, or the drummer, like, psh, 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 you know, that kind of guy, those awkward memes. That's me. I'm the awkward meme guy. But you know, I've been told that I'm pretty good at that. Actually, I'm more of the idea guy, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. The guitar player, Seth, comes with guitar riffs. Duck comes with drums, you know, parts, and I can usually see the pathway to making it into a song. So I write everything for Death Therapy, the bass parts and everything from the ground up. With BTA, it's more just like, this has really got to be about the guitars, and so we got to start with the riff. So that's where everything started. Seth came down, we all started writing riffs and stuff. So riff band, man.
So when you're in there, are you like pointing at the drummer, like, you know, like, no, like, do do pat,
like, yeah,
not a pat do do,
boom boom snick, yeah, totally. That's no, I have been told I am the world's greatest air drummer, so okay. Pretty good at that.
Well, so, I mean, you
know, used to be on tour. I'm not going to demonstrate right now, but
yeah, well, there are competitions out there. I think there was, I know there
was a movie made about that. Actually, did you see that movie?
I have not seen that movie. No.
Oh man, it's awesome.
I'll have to check it out.
Yep.
So was Solid State on board, you know, as soon as they heard you guys were doing some stuff, or did you have to go to them and all that fun stuff?
So I think there's been some discussion over the years. Seth would probably know more about that because, you know, he sort of, the band was not officially ever broken up. The band was sort of on hiatus since like 2012. But I was out of the band. So people would ask me for years and years, you know, so what's going on? And I'd be like, I don't know. I'm not in the band. I don't know what they're doing. But I think there were discussions between the band and the label. And then ultimately when, you know, it became possible for me to be a part of it and put some ideas down, the record label was into it. And that's really cool to me that Solid State's always been supportive. You know, not just of Becoming the Archetype, but Death Therapy. And yeah.
Are there other members of the band that, you know, wanted to reach out, well, have reached out, you know, that were maybe even in the band during, you know, your hiatus, things like that, that are interested in being in this version of, you know, of BTA?
So we reached out to everybody that was a previous member, basically, and made an effort to get everyone involved in some capacity. Like I said, Daniel did a guest guitar solo. There's another guest guitar solo on the fourth track of the record, song called The Calling. Alex, who played lead guitar on the Physics of Fire record, which is the sophomore Becoming the Archetype record, he jumped on for a guest guitar solo. Reached out to John, who was the original lead guitar player. He's just not available at this time to do anything like that. So, but I do think there's a lot of flair that, you know, really speaks to the original lineup with Seth. You know, myself, Seth, and Duck back as the core, and then having Daniel and Alex throw in some guitar solos. So, and our producer, Nate Washburn, also is an amazing guitar player. So he sort of stepped in a few times and played some leads and things like that. So,
will there be any touring or anything like that? You're going to get out there, you're going to get, you know, dust off the old chops and get out there and tour with this?
I wouldn't be against it, is all I can say at this point. The news is all still so new at this point that I don't know. You know, I don't know what interest is out there. I know the fans are interested. I've been getting all kinds of messages. I actually just got a text message while we started this interview from a guy asking, and you know what they're all asking? They're all asking, so how much for Becoming the Archetype and Death Therapy? And apparently they just think that I have vocal cords of steel and that I can do back-to-back sets and not die. But yeah, so I wouldn't say it's impossible that we'll do some shows, we'll do some festivals, do some tour dates, but nothing lined up currently. So,
well, we need to get on that.
We haven't gotten there yet. Yeah, we haven't gotten there yet. So, if you're a booking agent, reach out to me.
Nice. The you were talking about the comment section earlier. I was kind of going through some of the comments of the video for the Lost Colony, and it's just launched.
It's
amazing to me how overwhelming. Positive everybody is, and like just stoked to have you back in the band. You know, how many people, like, there's so many comments and they're like, I was just thinking about this band and here they are again, and you know, things like that. Just so many people just so excited to have you guys back in any kind of capacity.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was a smart move on the part of the record label and just to keep it sort of under wraps completely. There wasn't a big long drawn out teasing, you know, month long period of like, hey, maybe this band will do something. And it was just all of a sudden. So I think people are getting their, you know, getting their comments and their emotions out there. But I, you know, I've also, Becoming the Archetype is a band that never had a huge following, but always had a ridiculously like dedicated following. I tell people like we're the kind of band that we would do tours and we would play for, you know, 20, 30 people, a lot of places we would go play, but those 20 or 30 people would absolutely have more energy than a lot of shows you go to with 200 or 300 people, just right. Because everyone that was there, those 20 or 30, they're all just diehard. They know every word to every song. They all want to buy 3 t-shirts, you know? So BTA means a lot to people, to those people. So this is more, it's almost like a resurrection for those people, like a family member that they thought they had lost. So, that means a lot to me that it's, you know, that important to them. So,
in I hate bringing up this up, but in Primer 55, when we did a pseudo reunion tour, like in 08, 07, 08,
yeah,
and we would play these shows, and it's like what you're talking about. There'd be 20, 30 people there, but they were all singing the words. They were all jumping around. They were all, it was the most bizarre thing I've ever seen, because coming from like a local band, you play in front of 20, 30 people and they're like arms right. crossed, don't care. You know, the like, when's the band I'm coming to see going to play type stuff. But you know, you play in front of a small crowd, but everybody's singing every word. You know, it's that, I guess it's kind of cliche to be like, you know, you got to play like you're playing in front of 10,000 when you're playing in front of those people. Cause you know, you're making those people's nights, man. It's crazy.
Totally. But that's something that has stuck with me. I'm not going to say that I never had a bad attitude on tour when we play for a small crowd, but, when I started playing shows with Death Therapy and we play for 5 people, it was a lot easier to be like, well, we've got to play like we're playing for 500, you know, we got to give it our full energy. And it turns out that never really backfires. Like there's no downside. There's no fan at the show who's like, man, that was awkward to watch you guys really rock out. Like when there were only 5 of us, like nobody would say that.
Right.
The only reaction they have is, man, that's how awesome that we got that little private show basically. And that you guys didn't quit on us. I mean, I've done tours. I won't mention the band's names, but I've done tours with big headliners who draw, you know, thousands and show up at a show where the attendance is super low and they just come out and phone it in and play like half the set that they've been playing the rest of the tour and then bail out and don't sign autographs, you know, stuff like that. And that's just, that's really trashy. So don't want to be that guy.
Yeah. Definitely don't want to be that guy. Are we going to have more videos coming out? Are you guys going to kind of do more videos for different tracks, things like that, kind of leading up to the August release?
I hope so. We shot 2 music videos and then there's some talk of a third video, some kind of thematic video that ties in with those. So yeah, I hope we have some more coming, and I know there's more songs coming out before the release. So the release is August, what would you say? 23rd?
26th.
26th, August 26th. Yeah.
Very so. Randomly do I have the release date and the artist doesn't. Normally I didn't write it down properly.
Totally.
As we kind of wrap up this part of it, do you want to talk about the kind of the theme of the album, or do you want to leave it up to listeners?
And that's a hard one because, like I said, this is the first time. So Becoming the Archetype has always been a band that had sort of, you know, science fiction or fantasy themes or drew from literature or whatever. The record that we did with Devin Townsend was heavily influenced by Stephen King's Dark Tower series. And some other things, but this record, I was like, man, I really want to write, you know, beginning to end 10 songs that all tell one story. And that's really difficult for me. I don't know if it's hard for anybody else, but it's also hard to pull it off without it being corny. I think that's one of the like trips, the things that trips up people writing prog music, or maybe trips up people from liking prog music sometimes, is it's like, you know, when you're having to sing something as the narrator, or you're describing something that's happening in the story, you got to be creative to make it sound cool in a song. So I don't necessarily want to give away too much of the story because I think there's a lot to dig into for people. And I kind of hoping people will have, I'm interested to see what people's interpretations of things will be. There's a lot of spiritual things going on in Becoming the Archetype music in general, lyrically. But this one, I kind of didn't want to spoon feed it to people. I kind of wanted people to dig in and be challenged by what's there. So it's not quite as obvious, is the best way I know how to put it, what's going on. So, yeah.
Jason is the man. Thanks for taking some time with us here. Talking to the podcast, notfest.com. Once again, Becoming the Archetype, Children of the Great Extinction, out August 26th, Solid State Records. And just, man, thanks for taking some time.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me, as always.
Oh, Lord, my God, when I end up some water, runs it around the world. I end up pain. I see the stars. I hear the rolling thunder. I bow throughout the universe that's blind. And when I think that God is son not sparing, send him to die, I scared can't take it in. And on the cross,
all right, huge thank you to Jason Wisdom for taking some time here. Talk to me podcast, notfest.com. Again, Becoming the Archetype, Children of the Great Extinction, out August 26th. Go check out the Lost Colony now. And not a ton going on, man. You got any good recommendations? Some good things you've been watching lately?
There is a show on Hulu, a Hulu original called The Bear. And it stars...
I've heard a lot about this.
It's great. It is fantastic. It stars Lip from he I don't know his real name, but he played Lip on Shameless.
Okay.
And he's like the basic premise to it is that his brother owned this restaurant, and I guess the stress of running the restaurant got to him and he blew his head off. So now Lip has to take it over, and it's just a really dysfunctional restaurant. It's all kinds of a mess and, you know, all kinds of bad behavior and not cleaning and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, it's talking about, and now this, the guy that Lip plays, his name is Carmi, and Carmi is like a master chef, but he can't be a master chef because he's trying to continue the family business. So he's trying to bring his master chef to like a sandwich shop kind of a deal. And, it's really intense and it's kind of funny. It's a good show. If you've ever watched any of the Chicago TV shows, Chicago Med, Chicago Fire, Chicago PD, seems like everybody that's in those shows is in this show too. There's at least five or six people from those three shows that are on this thing as well. And because it's Hulu, it has the profanity, which, you know, I like. So, yeah, it's a great show. It's just called The Bear. It's out on Hulu. I think they're releasing two episodes a week on that. And then the other one is one of my old standbys, Animal Kingdom. Animal Kingdom [S2] Nice. [S1] Is back for their final season, and it's really intense, and it's really, really good. And I won't get into anything that's going on it other than it's really intense and it's really good. And the girls are really hot and the guys are really filthy and it's fantastic. It's just one of the great shows of our time.
So I've got a couple, we'll do a podcasty one first. If you grew up in Nashville in the 90s, Lucy's Record Shop was like the cool club to play, all ages punk club, held about 200 people. It was like it says, it was a record shop. And in the back was the club. Lucy was the dog. The host of the show is Mary Mancini, who ran Lucy's Record Shop. She's put out a podcast. You can go to lucysrecordshop.com. It's just called the Lucy's Record Shop Podcast. If you were around that time, that area, that, you know, that was the first time my old band like ever sold out a show.
Okay.
It was at the Lucy's Record Shop, you know, and it was crazy. You know, I was still in high school and I look out and damn, the place is packed.
Nice.
With people wall to wall. It was nuts, man. It was crazy, you know, selling out shows at 17, but she's got about eight episodes out now. You know, yeah. If you're not really from the area, you might not get it, but you know, Lucy's Record Shop was there from 92 to 98. And everybody that's on it's, you know, roughly my age and maybe a little bit older. They all have kind of their, it's kind of cool hearing the other kids from that era, what they've gone on to do.
Right.
And then, I think I'll be doing an episode of the show in July.
All right.
So kind of talk of, because it was such a punk rock club that, you know, and I was in such a metal band, you know, we were kind of like a sore thumb or, you know, stuck out like a sore thumb there.
Right.
But we all kind of, you know, we all enjoyed, you know, Minor Threat and all those, the punk sure. stuff and kind of the punk mentality and reading Get in the Van by Henry Rollins and thinking that's how you have to be in a band and all the other stuff, when really we were playing music that, you know, was more commercially viable and could have had a bigger machine behind it. So we were playing like a new metal style, but with like punk rock ethos. It was a very nice. Bizarre time. But yeah, so she's doing a podcast now, kind of talking to all the kind of the Lucy's kids from back in the day. And then, okay. And so I'll be doing an episode with her soon. It was funny. She sent me a kind of like a, it was called like the Lucy's Record Shop podcast primer or whatever. It basically, it was like this, all this stuff that we're going to talk about. And I was like, man, this is way more professional than how I do it. I'm just like, here's the link, show up.
Right.
She's like, have a couple of stories about this. Think about this. Right. You know, what did this mean to you? Well, you know, like, I'm like, well, crap.
She wrote you a treatment.
Yeah. It was like homework, man. But I'm pumped to do it, man. So that'll be out in a few, or that episode will be recorded in a couple of weeks. I think she banks them. So, okay. So no telling when it's out, but I'll let everybody know when it's
cool.
out.
Cool, cool.
TV side, finished up Obi-Wan. Definitely, I loved it, man. I
did too.
I've always, you know, I don't necessarily want to be John Drake about Star Wars, but mm-hmm. I've always enjoyed my friends that are that deep into it. You know,
sure.
A couple of friends that, you know, if I have some questions about Star Wars, I can call them up and they're like, oh, well, you know, this means that and that means this and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to do a podcast about it tomorrow. But I will say that after watching The Mandalorian and The Book of Boba Fett and, you know, watching Rogue One and the Obi-Wan series, I've rewatched A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back.
Okay.
And they're different movies to me now. Like now... Oh, yeah. Now everything's like making way more sense mm-hmm. and it feels more like a timeline that I can follow.
Sure.
But we have tickets. I bought tickets for me and my stepson to go see, they're going to do Return of the Jedi with the Louisville Orchestra.
Okay.
So they're going to, you know, basically be playing John Williams' score along with it. Right. So that's going to be cool. So I watched the first two. And then I'm going to watch the third one on Saturday to kind of finish nice. Out this this long trilogy that I've been doing.
Nice. Don't tell John or you might have guests.
Hey, he's more than welcome to come along, man. But yeah.
It's, yeah, I like the Obi-Wan. You know, dude, it's getting a ton of heat. I'm surprised online how many people hate it. And again, it goes back to just what you were saying. I think those of us that are just not that serious about it.
Yeah.
We just kind of watching like, okay, cool. Darth Vader, Obi-Wan, sword fight, lightsabers. It's great. You know, that's how I looked at it. It's like, it's great. Lots of action, lots of battles, lots of fights, you know, but I'm definitely like you. I'm not the guy that can be like, well, wait a minute. I know for a fact that he wore a sandal with a strap in right. episode 4. So why is he wearing a boot in episode in this? You know, it's like, I can't be bothered.
There were a few times in like A New Hope where some things were said and I'm like, why would you say that if this just, you know, like if they're for continuity purposes,
right.
There was a few things that were said. And I was like, I mean, really, you know, like,
right.
But other than that, I mean, I think it all works together very well. You know, and obviously they wrote the Obi-Wan series after these other movies came out. So, I mean, they've kind of got a, fitted into a, you know, a square, you know, square peg in the round hole right. type thing. They have to fit it just perfectly. But I think overall, man, they did really well, and everything just makes more sense. The one thing that the Obi-Wan series did for me was really put Anakin Skywalker in the Darth Vader suit. You know, sure. it's not two separate people. Like,
right.
You kind of, when you saw the prequels and then you saw the original trilogy, it was still hard to put that, you know, Hayden Christensen in the Darth Vader suit.
Right. So I agree with you, man.
I see it now though.
Sure. All right. So, well, before you wrap things up, I promised this the other week and then I forgot, but okay. I definitely, because it was a fucking huge thing, I got to say one more time, a big thank you to our friends at BMG and Chipster PR.
Nice. Look at
that.
Nice.
Look at that. The whole box set of albums, man. How fucking sweet is that?
Is that nice?
Is that not nice?
Was that the first five albums of Soulfly?
Yeah, it's Soulfly, Prediv, 3, Prophecy, or first four, and then the bonus LP, Soulfire, which I don't know what that is. And I obviously haven't opened it to look. So, but yeah, dude, I don't even know what I did to get this thing, because I haven't interviewed Max or Igor or Max for Soulfly.
Yeah,
I mean, even the interviews that me and you did with Igor and with Max were for Solo Tour.
Right.
So I don't know why they sent this, but hey, I ain't complaining. $200 box set. Thank you. So all good, man. I just wanted to quickly say thank you to them publicly, because that's a really nice gift.
Nice.
So there we go.
Yeah. So just go ahead and send that over whenever you get a chance. And, actually, if we break up, then you have to send me, you know, Prophecy at least on vinyl.
All right. I'll send you 3. It's the one I like the least.
Right. We'll send it down to Bobby Burns. He'll autograph Prophecy for you.
Well, no, I'll send it to you. You can get it autographed since you know him.
Nice. I did have one other recommendation. Okay. I really enjoyed the Beavis and Butthead movie. If you like that, if you like Beavis and Butthead, you're not going to be disappointed. They didn't miss a beat. Another thing, I watched it with my stepson, who is 15.
Yeah.
And just watching him watch it,
mm-hmm.
you know, all the little innuendo jokes and shit like that, you know,
sure.
just kind of reliving that through, you know, because when that first run of it, you know, I was 15.
Right.
And mm-hmm. so I was like, you know, I was totally laughing at it like I'm Beavis and Butthead. And now seeing him watch it, it was kind of funny just to see him kind of watching all the goofy sexual humor and stuff like that.
Sure.
And getting into it. So I thoroughly enjoyed the Beavis and Butthead. Was it Do the Universe?
Yeah. Beavis and Butthead Do the Universe. I enjoyed it too. I thought, I mean, is it going to win an Academy Award? No, but is it what you want? Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, I actually think it was better than Do America.
I'm a big fan of Do America, so
I like Do America too, but I think this was better. It was more goofy.
Yeah.
A little more goofy, and I don't know what was their name? Were they just Future Beavis and Future Butthead?
Smart Beavis and Smart
Butthead. Smart Beavis and Smart Butthead. I thought they were hysterical.
Yeah.
You know, I love that little addition. And you know, that's like a unique twist that they've never done before. So I enjoyed it thoroughly, man. I mean, if I was numbering it out of 10, I would say a solid like 8.5. It was very enjoyable.
Oh, yeah.
I really liked it.
Yeah, I signed up for the signed up for the Paramount Plus, and I actually watched a couple of episodes of Beavis and Butthead afterwards and just totally fell back into being a teenager again and just laughing like an idiot at those shows. Sure.
And they've got that new series getting ready to come out too, don't they? With videos and everything on Paramount Plus. I can't wait.
It is funny. I saw someone post this on Facebook, so I'm not going to take credit for it, but someone said that any reaction video people need to just go back to Beavis and Butthead and like say thank you, because I mean they were kind of the originators of the reaction video, or at least made it popular. I think there was like a Wayne's World special where Wayne kind of reacted to a couple of videos, but he was kind of playing off of some goofy stuff. But Beavis and Butthead to me really took that kind of playful reaction video and then everybody's doing now and just kind of taught you how to do it.
I'm sure all these guys that are specializing in reaction videos, they would hate that you say that they stole Beavis and Butthead's act, but it's true.
I mean, what else do they do? You know, they play the video, they react to it, they make fun of it, and they move on, man.
Yeah, I love it. I can't wait. I cannot wait for the new season or is it a new season or new series? I don't know. I
think it's a new series. Well, I guess it'll be season.
I don't know. We're not going to get into the tech of it. It's going to be on Paramount Plus. Watch it if you want. How's that?
Awesome. Well, another thing to check out is once it comes out, once again, Becoming the Archetype, Children of the Great Extinction, out August 26th on Solid State Records. And I didn't really say this earlier, but man, for a band that hasn't been together for roughly 10 years, Jason hasn't been back in the band for 10 years. For them to just kind of quietly do a quote unquote reunion album and start to finish, man, this album is a banger.
Yeah, I haven't heard the album. I heard just the one song that's out there on Spotify. Yeah. But then I went right down the rabbit hole and I listened to like the 2012 album and the 2011 album. And it's remarkably consistent with a 10-year gap. I was meaning to ask you that, is where they broke up or do they just not have everything on Spotify? But man, solid band. I'm going to be honest. Yeah. I didn't know shit about them until literally yesterday. So, good stuff though, man. I really like it.
Yeah. Good times. Well, that does it for another episode of Talk To Me here, notfest.com. And so for the Talk To Me podcast, I'm Joshua Toomey.
I am Chris Hagan.
And we will talk to you next week from a bathroom that is air conditioned.
That's right. Charmin.
Oh man, what an idiot.
The Talk To Me podcast presented by NotFest.com. Follow the show at Talk To Me Talk. Be sure to subscribe, rate the podcast, and leave a review on your favorite podcast app to get the latest from the Talk To Me podcast.